The apparel looks like the real thing, from hats to jerseys, even Super Bowl rings, but they're all fake, and they've been seized by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
I've been fighting for universal health care for many years, and we're now on the path to achieving it. I don't want us to start over again.
How is he going to take over CPS if he can't even do a budget with the state? Yet he's going to come here, he needs to set his own house in order, and he needs to sit down before he breaks something.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:10 and it is Friday. It's February 5th. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. We have a big show for you today. We have Heather Long from CNN Money coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk to us about the latest from the markets, including word today that President Obama may put a surcharge on a barrel of oil, every barrel of oil, to help pay for some transportation projects. Also, we're expecting lots of employment data today and some other reports that could impact how the markets move today. It's all coming up. We're also going to be talking shortly about the gig economy, as it's being called. Freelancers out there, take note and stay tuned. Asian stock markets uneven today as investors awaited U.S. job numbers that could influence how everybody moves today. Japanese shares sagged on the strength of the yen overnight. All eyes, however, are on the U.S. government employment report that's due out later this morning. After the Asian markets close, analysts expect about 200,000 jobs to be added, with the unemployment rate holding steady at 5%. However, weaker than expected figures would add to another downbeat economic data report that has been piling up in recent days, including contracting U.S. and Chinese factory activity and disappointing U.S. service sector numbers. Taken together, it could all be used to support the case for the Fed putting off further interest rate hikes, a prospect that's already helped push down the dollar. Benchmark U.S. crude oil is trading at $32 a barrel this morning. As I mentioned earlier, the dollar weakened against the yen, was slightly higher against the euro. The Fed, however, appears to be standing firm on its plan to raise four times this year interest rates. The Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester on CNBC yesterday afternoon says there is no change in the Fed policy, at least right now. And she says the Fed is keeping a close watch on things, but still plans to raise interest rates four times this year. It's something that the Fed watcher Kevin Kelly, who's the chief investment officer of Recon Capital, just can't understand.
There is a little bit of an overhang of economic data, and we even saw that with the GDP numbers, and that's why people are thinking that the Fed won't be raising the four times as they have indicated.
And another Federal Reserve chairman from the Midwest also emphasizing that the Fed has no plans to change its course, which is, again, to raise interest rates four times this year. Are you a freelancer? Do you work in what is being called the gig economy? If you do, Amy Groth, who is a contributor to Quartz, is with us this morning to talk about this and what you may be doing wrong or right and how this may actually be hurting or helping the workplace. Amy Groth, welcome back to the Opening Bell. How are you?
Good morning. How about you?
Yeah, great. So, you know, the gig, I was, until recently, for a couple of years, I was in the gig economy. I was a freelancer, and it really is sort of a minefield. We're going to talk to you in depth after our break, but give us a tease of what it is that this gig economy is and why we should take notice.
Sure. Well, it's just a huge sector of the economy. It's interesting you mentioned, you know, the jobs report is coming out today. But one big question that economists have is how large is this sector, and how should we be treating this group of 1099 workers?
And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, are they even counted in the job? There's questions about whether or not they're even counted in that, the numbers, and you know, employers treat freelancers sort of like contractors. So I think some employers don't even count freelancers when they do job roles, right?
Exactly.
So do you have like a piece of advice or one thing that we're doing wrong in this area that you might, we'll talk about after the break?
Sure. Well, basically, I think that, you know, freelancers should basically consider the networks that they're entering is kind of the most important piece whenever they're considering, you know, a new contract or a new gig.
And the thing is, we will, again, talk about this after we check traffic here coming up, but you may not actually be an employee of a company, but you may have a lifelong relationship with a company. And we'll talk with Amy Groth about that coming up again. She's a contributor to Quartz. You can find her on Twitter at A-I-M-E-E Groth, Amy at Amy Groth. And we'll continue our conversation with her on the opening bell. Right after we check traffic, it's a slippery morning, Mary Vandevelle.
From ABC News Wall Street Now. The eyes of the world's investors are on the U.S. government report on last month's unemployment due out later today. Any rise in joblessness is likely to have the Fed putting off further interest rate hikes. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 80 points to 16,416. The S&P 500 picked up 3. Problem solved at the IRS, where a computer hardware issue forced the agency to stop accepting electronically filed tax returns. The IRS commissioner says taxpayers now should see little impact on filing returns or getting refunds. Another touchdown for fantasy sports. Rhode Island's attorney general says daily fantasy sports leagues are legal under state law. His counterparts in some other places have declared that the practice of betting on imaginary sports teams equates to gambling. Speaking of, brick-and-mortar casinos all over the country are trying out new tactics to bolster their sagging business and to attract millennials. Tattoo studios, mixed martial arts, and electronic games are suddenly becoming the norm. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Amy Groth, who is a business writer and especially with business strategy and entrepreneurship. We're talking about the gig economy and the freelance nation. And Amy, I'm interested in your take on, you know, building these lifelong relationships with companies as a freelancer. How important to survival is that to a freelancer?
Yeah, well, that's crucial. You know, we are moving into a freelance nation. By 2020, I think 40% of Americans are going to be freelancers. And that means that people are going to just be moving from project to project, gig to gig. And the way that you're going to get those gigs is through your relationships with people. So it's just really important to be establishing lifelong relationships today and looking ahead several decades.
How, in your reporting, have you found a good way to do that? I mean, what advice would you give people, and what experiences have you found that people are successful in this area doing that?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a bit of what was the genesis for this piece. I met this community. It's the Summit Series community. They're based in Eden, Utah. And it's just a group of entrepreneurs and a lot of 1099 workers. And they all support one another through these bonds and these relationships, and somehow they make it work and kind of are able to kind of really scale up in their careers just by maintaining these really valuable relationships.
There is a sense among some that watch this field, this sector, if you will, that freelancers are taken advantage of to a certain extent. Do you find that, and does there need to be some sort of protections put in place for the freelance nation?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge conversation right now. There is no infrastructure that really helps this, you know, group of 1099 workers. And what I would say is, because that does not yet exist, what we need to do is just focus on joining all the right networks. So that, I mean, the network itself is your protection, you know, on some level.
And what this is, you know, one of the areas that this is really obvious is in journalism. I recall recently, you know, a reporter being killed overseas that was a freelancer and, you know, initially wasn't treated as well as an employee would have been, you know, covered by insurance, that sort of thing. So this goes really deeper than just getting paid. It's sort of your yeah. well-being as well, right?
That is so true. Yeah. And there are things that, I mean, that some people are coming up with, like portable benefits, and you know, there are more like financial tech software. There's more, you know, there are more options out there for freelancers, but it's not yet it's not good enough to kind of really give these people the protections that they need, and that's a huge problem.
You mentioned the 1099. Whenever you say that word, I kind of get a chill up my spine, because I know that this year I'm going to have to go through my taxes, and it's never an easy thing when you're a freelancer, right? I mean, that's the other thing that may need to be fixed with this whole mess, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate around, the U.S. needing a new worker classification, something between 1099 and W-2. But that will take a long time. And, I mean, that probably wouldn't even, unfold until, like, 2020.
Yeah, at least we're having the conversation, though, so maybe somebody will hear this and get on the ball. And if you don't know what we're talking about, by the way, when you're a freelancer, you have to pay your own taxes and make sure those are paid generally quarterly, right? And also your own, unemployment insurance and Social Security. It's a daunting task for some. How do people survive doing that, and what pitfalls are there?
Yeah, how do they? I'd love to know. Actually, I'm thinking more deeply into that.
Yeah.
I actually am a 1099 worker. I contribute to courts and whatnot. So I'm actually looking for better ways to do it. Earlier this week, I spoke with some folks who are with some financial technology firms, and they provide services that really kind of help with things like taxes and accounting and whatnot. And that those things seem to be really good options.
As people are listening to this, and as I read your article, I came away positive from it. Is that the way you wanted it to come? Is this a positive future that we see with this future freelance gig economy, or is it a negative thing?
Right. Well, I think it's exciting because I think it means we're moving into a nation where people are taking more ownership of their careers. Like you're operating more like an entrepreneur. I think that's the American dream, but you need, protection. So I don't think that the government will come up with anything anytime soon, any infrastructure. I think that kind of solutions are going to appear. They're going to come out of startups and in the private sector and through networks and whatnot that are going to really kind of help support the 1099 economy. But I'm actually very excited about it.
The startups you mentioned, you start at the very beginning of your article by talking about the PayPal mafia, who's now become, the Elon Musks of the world, right?
Yeah. I mentioned them because, Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn, he just, made the comment like, that we need to focus, that everyone should just look at, lifelong employment. Or no, he said lifelong employment is over, but we should look at lifetime relationships as the ideal. And these guys in the PayPal Mafia, I mean, they built this company together, and they've kind of benefited from these tight bonds for over a lifetime. And that's how we should all really be looking at work.
Amy Groth is a contributor at Quartz.com, QZ.com. You can find her on Twitter at AIMEE Groth, Amy Groth. Thank you for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Thanks so much.
It's 5:26 here on WGN, and coming up, details that the Pope has just called an important matter and a meeting close to the United States. That's with Vic. We'll have coming up in the news. Stay with us. It's 5:27.
From ABC News, tech trends, virtual reality on the football field. A handful of NFL teams are using a new tool to help them outwit their opponents. It's called Striver, or sports training in virtual reality, and it all started at Stanford with Eric Belch.
This was my master's thesis while I was a grad student at Stanford and also coaching for the football team.
Simulators use animated graphics, but for the split-second decisions a quarterback makes, Stanford research suggested real video would work better, and it seems the research was right.
We're seeing guys actually, get in their stance, actually take a drop, actually get down and actually play the position without having to run and sweat and hit somebody.
It teaches quarterbacks to recognize a defensive play from where they actually stand on the field. And although it started with quarterbacks, it works for other players too. Belch says while practice can help you win, being well rested can help too.
They don't need to do the physical work as often, and you're seeing a lot of research that says these guys should train less in some instances.
With Tech Trends, I'm Mark Remillard, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 5:37, and there's a little bit more developing news we're keeping our eye on this morning. Julian Assange may actually leave the Ecuadorian embassy this morning. According to reports in London today, there's apparently a press stakeout there. Either he's going to come out and leave or make a statement after the United Nations sided with him about his being held in London. According to the UN, we'll keep watching that. We're also watching a couple of big business stories this morning. Among them is the employment report out later. Also, this talk of an oil surcharge on a barrel of oil to help pay for transportation projects in the U.S. Let's bring in Heather Long of CNN Money at Buy Heather Long. Good morning, Heather. Welcome to the Bell.
Good morning. Happy Friday, Steve.
Yeah, it seems like everything's happening all at once this morning. Let's start with the big one that everybody seems to be talking about this morning. That's this oil surcharge. Does that have any legs?
Well, certainly the Republicans in the Congress have come out and said, no way does this have legs. The president calls it a fee, but they're, of course, calling it a tax. So we'll see what happens. I think it's pretty clear that the United States needs to repair our roads and bridges. We need to do some infrastructure spending, but whether or not it gets paid for this way is a very open question.
Yeah, and when you put it in perspective, we were at, what, $100 a barrel per oil. It's $30, $31 this morning. Another 10 would be 43. I mean, if we all paid, were able to survive $100 a barrel, we could survive 43, couldn't we?
Yes. I mean, that's certainly what the president is arguing, that, as we all know, when we go and pay for our gas super cheap right now. I will say I think it's a little disingenuous. The president sort of characterizes this as a fee on the oil companies. But as we all know, when businesses get assessed, they usually pass that tax or pass that fee on to customers. So we would see that increase at the pump if this were implemented. But as you're saying, at the moment, it probably wouldn't feel that bad. Yeah, and have a little bit higher gas prices.
And the state of the infrastructure, that's, you know, a whole nother conversation for another day. But, you know, the nation's engineers routinely rank our bridges and roads in D plus and F areas. They do really need a lot of work, right?
Exactly. I come from the state of Pennsylvania, not too far from you all, and they just blew up an old bridge there. They called it old. It was 100 years old, but it was actually the second most recent big bridge that was built in Pennsylvania, 100 years old.
The other thing we're watching today is obviously the jobs report. You have been reporting on the number of job cuts. The employment report is expected to stay steady. The unemployment figure is expected to stay steady. Is that the case, do you think, or are we going to see a surprise this morning?
That's an open question. I mean, there's two things people are watching in the jobs report. Number one is what you're saying, the headline figure of how many jobs were added in January. And we had a stellar 2014 and 2015. Those were the best 2 years of job gains in this country since 1999. So we've really been on a roll on jobs, on hiring and people getting jobs. You know, January is always a tricky month. As we all know, a lot of people get employed for the Christmas, the holiday season, and then they get laid off when people stop shopping in January. So you always expect a little bit of a slowdown in January. What CNN Money is forecasting, the number to watch is it above or under 200,000 jobs added? Because that's been kind of the marker of really solid job gains. If we can get a number over 200,000 or pretty close to it. And at the moment, we're forecasting 197. So right in that range of still feeling pretty good, pretty solid about where we are. But if the number comes in a lot lower than that, that's going to keep this people more angsty, more on edge. The other key figure to watch, almost more important than that, how many jobs were added, is how are wages doing? Are they growing? Because our economy, 70% of our economy in the United States is built on you and me and your listeners going out and buying things, buying our groceries, buying our kids stuff for our kids' birthday parties, buying sports tickets. And so if wages are going up, we all tend to feel a little better and we tend to spend more. And that's a good sign for the economy. But if those wages aren't going up, again, there's something going on there that starts to be a red flag.
And it's almost like we're living in some sort of ulterior universe, because you talk about how, you know, people spend money when they have it. But, you know, there are reports, the latest reports are that people have actually been saving the money, like with oil, the money they've been saving on the gas. They've been actually putting it in the bank instead of spending it or paying off their credit cards. And then there's this discussion of the Fed, and, you know, despite all the volatility around the world, they seem pretty firm on this 4 interest rate hikes this year.
I'll push back a little bit. I don't know that they're firm on 4, but I think they're definitely trying to remind the market at the moment. The market is actually predicting no interest rate hikes this year. And I was at an event last night where the Cleveland Fed president, Loretta Mester, was one of many Fed members. She was out in New York trying to remind people, look, the fundamentals of the U.S. economy, her exact words were, remain sound. So she still thinks it's pretty healthy out there. Now, the other key word that she kept saying over and over again, whenever she was asked any question, how many rate hikes are you going to do? What do you think about the strong dollar? What do you think about oil prices? Was assessing. I'm reassessing. It's premature to judge right now. I am assessing. And so what she was trying to tell people, I think, is there probably will be more than zero rate hikes, but whether or not there will still be four, we'll see in March what their predictions are. A lot of people don't think they're going to raise at their March meeting.
And that's the other thing, too, that I'd like to, if you want to stick around for our next segment, we'll talk about, and that is how much does the actual market conditions drive the Fed and their reaction to some of the markets when the global markets tank, when the U.S. markets tank? We'll chat about that coming up in our next segment here on The Opening Bell. It is 5:44 right now. The Dow futures are just a little higher this morning, up about 4 points, 16,332. S&P futures are flat. The price of oil trading at 31.84. In Asia this morning, mixed numbers there. The Nikkei off 225. The Hang Seng up. Shanghai down. Sensex up in Europe. Trading is just a little higher this morning. So that's what's the market looks like, the snapshot this morning. We'll continue our discussion with Heather Long of CNN Money coming up. But right now, let's check the traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Heather Long of CNN Money at By Heather Long on Twitter. And we before the break, we're talking about the Federal Reserve. And you were actually with one of the Fed people last night from Cleveland, the Fed chairman from Cleveland. I'm wondering in her body language, and she said that China posed some risk, but she sort of, I mean, doesn't China pose a bigger risk than she sort of sounded last night?
Yes and no. I think what she said after her remarks to some of the press members, the biggest risk from China is probably what's going on in their banking sector and with their debt problems. So that's sort of the equivalent of what was happening in the United States a few years ago with our whole subprime mortgage crisis. That's a lot murkier. It's a lot harder to get your hand on just how bad that debt, some people are calling it a debt bomb, is in China, because that could truly shake the global banking system again if that really becomes a crisis in China. But we don't know when that's going to happen. And we also don't know, much like the U.S. government, the Chinese government is even more active in its economy and trying to make sure that its economy stays growing and stays stable. So if they see signs that this bomb is about ready to explode, you better believe that the Communist Party in China is going to be taking a lot of actions. And they have a ton of money. They have one of the biggest reserve piggy banks in the world, and they are going to be spending that money to try to ensure that this does not become a crisis in their country or around the world. So yes and no on China. I think the United States, again, as we were talking earlier, our economy is still hugely reliant on Americans going out and buying things. And so, yes, we are seeing spillover effects from the headwinds around the world, but the key here for us is really, how do Americans feel about their pocketbooks? How do they feel when they go out shopping?
One of the things I enjoy about your reporting, Heather, is you seem to be, at least compared to some of the other places that I see business news, every day you see some people saying, oh, we're headed for a recession again, 2008 again. And you know, the reporting that you do is sort of like you're finding like the real, you know, how it really is. I'm interested in how we as listeners and investors and people with money, or people without money in that case, should read all of this. When we hear people saying, get ready for 2008 again, and you know there's a recession coming or a double dip, how do we filter out this noise?
Yeah, that's the question I'm asking myself, too. I invest, too. It's a really frustrating time to be an investor right now. 93% of people lost money in January. So pretty much all of us lost money in January. And the problem is, you sit here in the first week of February, and we really don't know, have a whole lot more clarity than we did a month ago when things were really looking bad. you know, as you were saying, China's still an open question. Oil prices, they've kind of stabilized, if we can even use the word stabilize, around that $30, $31 a barrel, but they can sure jump up and down some more, and we expect that to happen. And as you're saying, we really don't know what all of this means for the U.S. economy, all this turmoil around the world, or what the Federal Reserve is going to do. All those questions we were talking about a month ago, we're still talking about today. So I think for me, I step back and I say three things that I've been sort of telling myself. You know, number one is the U.S. economy does not look like it's headed for a recession. You know, are we going to have stellar growth this year? No. But we are still growing as an economy, and right now that has not changed, this notion that we're just going to suddenly dip into recession. So I try to say, don't panic. We're not in recession right now. I think the second thing I try to say is, look, stock market, very jittery right now, but you got to think long term. And I think I said it on your program before. If you can stay in the market every 15-year period of the market, people have made money in stocks. So if you've got 10 or 15 years or certainly longer to go before you need those retirement funds or you need to access that money you're investing, you're better off probably sticking with your stocks and not panicking and going all to cash or going all to bonds. Now, that said, the third thing that I think that I hear a lot and I do think is valid is at the moment we're in a period where two things look pretty good right now. One of those is dividend stocks, and we've seen it, you know, the tech companies, the Apples and even in the Amazons and the Netflix of the world, they're getting hit really hard right now. But the companies that are doing well are a lot of our blue chip companies because they pay dividends. We may not expect them to grow a lot, so their stock price isn't jumping up a lot, but these companies are sitting on a lot of cash, and they're giving some of that cash back to investors, and so you make some return from that dividend, even if the stock price isn't going up a lot.
Heather Long from CNN Money, it's always good having you on the opening bell, and hopefully we won't be in for a roller coaster today. Hopefully it'll be a smooth ride into the weekend.
I think that's big hope. We'll see what happens.
All right. You can find Heather, of course, at CNN Money and also at by Heather Long on Twitter. Heather Long from CNN Money. This is the opening bell. Just real quickly, a snapshot of the markets again. Market futures are a little lower this morning on the Dow. The S&P futures are flat. So we'll see what happens. Those economic reports due out a little later on this morning. That's our program for today, produced by Mary Sandberg. Our production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran, our engineer Ben Cortez, and Bob Ferguson. Thanks for listening to the opening bell. We'll be back bright and early on Monday morning. The Steve Cochran Show is next. It's 5:55 on WGN.